Good afternoon. Welcome into another edition of The Scoop here on KLGR 1490 AM, FM 95.9, also myklgr.com. An eventful night in the sporting world last night. The Minnesota Timberwolves put on a bit of a show against the Cleveland Cavaliers. If you missed it, you missed quite the performance. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that from a LeBron James-led team, but nonetheless, huge win for the Timberwolves last night. Also, some late game drama in the national championship game between Alabama and Georgia, and a very, very gutsy decision by Nick Saban that at the time looked like a bad call but ended up paying off. We'll talk about all of that on the show here today. Plus, we're going to dive a little deeper into Sunday's matchup between the Vikings and the Saints. We'll take a look at some of the key matchups in Sunday's game. So plenty to get to here today. Why don't we start it off by taking a look at our top sports headlines for today. Taking a look at our top sports headlines for Tuesday, January 9th, Alabama is your national champion as they stun Georgia in overtime, 26-23. More on that score in a little bit. Alabama had a chance to win the game outright in the fourth quarter as they drove down late and set up for a game-winning field goal. However, the kick was missed and we headed to overtime. Alabama elected to go on defense first, and Georgia came away with a field goal after getting sacked on third down and putting themselves in a spot where they had to make a 51-yard field goal. Alabama then went next, and after benching their starting quarterback for the second half, they then went and were able to tie the score. In overtime, though, they get sacked, and then on the next play, complete a long touchdown pass to win the game. Now, Alabama was favored by 4 points in this game, and they end up winning by 3 points. So I'm sure there are going to be a few people that are upset about that final score, but nonetheless, a great game and very gutsy call by Nick Saban to bench his starting quarterback and go with the freshman, who ultimately ended up being able to lead them to the win, and Alabama able to stun the Bulldogs in the national championship game. A great game. Started off pretty slow. It was 13-0 at the half, but then Alabama and Georgia trading blows in the second half, and Alabama comes out on top. Minnesota Timberwolves taking on the Cleveland Cavaliers last night, and a dominant performance by the Minnesota Timberwolves as they win 127-99. Timberwolves just throttled the Cavaliers. They led 32-18 after 69-42 at the half, and it was pretty much over at that point. LeBron James just 10 points, the largest deficit that he has faced at any point in his career, tied for the most at that 41-point mark. He was a minus 39 for the game. The Timberwolves just putting on a clinic over the Cavaliers and getting to 26-16 on the season. So a raucous atmosphere last night at the Target Center. Felt like a playoff game. And Timberwolves are starting to bring the fans back. Tyus Jones leading the way once again at point guard for the Timberwolves. The Cincinnati Bengals, after agreeing to hang on to head coach Marvin Lewis, they have themselves a new defensive coordinator. Former Lions defensive coordinator Terrell Austin will fill that same role after Paul Gunther left to head to Oakland with John Gruden. Minnesota Wild are in action tonight. They will host the Calgary Flames, and for the Wild, they are sitting at 22-17-3. Calgary comes in 21-16-4, and the Wild trying to continue to creep back into the playoff races. They have played better over their last handful of games, other than what happened on Saturday in that 7-2 defeat. And the Carolina Panthers, off of their loss to the New Orleans Saints in the wild card round of the NFC playoffs, they have fired a couple of coaches on the offensive side of the ball, offensive coordinator Mike Shula and also their quarterbacks coach. So always seems like when a team has a bad loss like that, they shake things up a little bit, and certainly the Panthers are doing that here today. Also something to watch, and we'll talk more about this heading into the weekend, news from Chicago that Zach LaVine will likely get a chance to get back into the lineup on Saturday. That'll be his first action of the year after recovering from off-season surgery. And actually, the surgery happened last year, so recovering from that surgery looks like he'll be good to go on Saturday. Those are your top sports headlines here for today. When we come back, we'll take a look at Vikings-Saints, some key matchups for Sunday's game. That is on the way after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Your home for Redwood Valley Cardinal Athletics all season long. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
Back here on The Scoop, and it's time for a little bit of a deep dive into Vikings-Saints Round 2 on Sunday. Vikings coming in after the bye week. Saints coming off of a big victory against the Panthers, 31-26. Although a game in which a couple of key injuries took place that could end up hurting the Saints in this second matchup. Now, we go back to week one, and I know a lot of things have changed. Sam Bradford not quarterbacking the Vikings at this point, trying to work his way back from that knee injury. But look at the things that happened in that week one matchup. The Vikings on defense, they allowed 344 yards to the Saints. The Saints were 4 of 11 on third down, and they came away with 19 points. So those are some key areas that we look at here in this second go-around. The Vikings coming into this game, they are averaging giving up 15 points per game, right around there, 12 points per game at home. So that was an above-average game for the Vikings defense. They're coming in averaging, giving up 275 yards per game. So the Saints able to get above that mark as well. And the Vikings allowed 25% third down conversion rate. And the Saints, with their 4 of 11, were 36%. For the game. Now, looking as well, red zone, the Saints were 1 of 5. Vikings were 40% success rate in the red zone against their defense. So the Saints fell under that mark. Vikings dominated in terms of yards, 470 total yards in that matchup. They were 9 of 14 on third down, held the ball for 31 minutes. Compared to 28 for the Saints. No turnovers in this game, and also one sack each side for both teams in that first matchup. So you look at those for starters. You look at the Saints rushing the ball. They had Adrian Peterson at that point. So, yes, they were trying to do some different things. And Peterson finished with 6 carries for 18 yards. But they did still have Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram. Ingram finished with 6 rushes for 17 yards. He had 5 catches for 54 yards. Alvin Kamara finished with 4 catches for 20 yards. So 11 touches for Kamara, 11 touches for Ingram in that game. And looking at some of the other numbers, Michael Thomas had 5 catches for 45 yards. Ted Ginn had 4 catches for 53 yards. And there were some long plays as well. The Saints had a 52-yard reception caught by Tommy Lee Lewis. And also a couple of long passes. Ted Ginn had a 27-yard catch. Colby Fleener had a 24-yard catch as well. Longest run, though, of the day, Adrian Peterson, 9 yards. And that was his first run of the game. So after that, the Vikings really able to lock things down on the rushing attack for the Saints, just 60 yards in that first matchup between these two teams. Now, the Vikings had Dalvin Cook, so he obviously got a majority of the workload, 22 carries, 127 yards. But Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs had very good games, 9 catches, 157 yards for Thielen. And for Stephon Diggs, he had 7 catches, 93 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So a big game for both of those two in that first matchup. And it should be interesting to see how things play out here this second go around. Now, you look at how things have played out the rest of the season. The Saints took on the Patriots. In the second game of the year, they gave up 555 total yards. Tom Brady had 436 of those through the air. The Saints held to, they had 429 total yards, but they were still struggling to get the ground game going. Alvin Kamara had just 1 run for 3 yards, 3 catches for 51 yards, but that was just, again, some bad work by the defense of the Saints in Week 2. We move on to Week 3. The Saints get back on track, 34-13. They beat the Panthers 1-2 on the season. The Saints, 362 total yards. They give up 288, and much better on third down, 6 of 12. And in the red zone, they were 2 of 3. Just 2 penalties in this game. Interesting as well. But we've seen this with the Panthers. 3 turnovers. 3 interceptions thrown by Cam Newton. And if you are going to beat a team like the Saints, like what we saw on Sunday, you can't turn the ball over. Or it's going to just doom you to a loss. Now, after that Panthers game, the Saints shut out the Dolphins in London, and that was an ugly game. Field conditions were not ideal. Saints held the Dolphins to 186 total yards of offense and had a turnover as well. Just 11 third downs for Miami, and so the Saints get to 2-2 at that point. The Lions come in next. Saints go to 3-2. As this is when we started to see them get things going with Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara. 52-38, the final score. Lions turned the ball over 5 times. Saints had 3 turnovers as well. But you look at what Kamara and Ingram were able to do. Ingram had 25 carries for 114 yards, 2 touchdowns, and had 5 catches for 36 yards. Kamara had 75 yards on 10 carries and 12 yards on 3 receptions. So 87 yards on 13 touches for Kamara. And for Ingram, he had 150 yards on 30 touches. So that's when they started to kind of get things going with Kamara and Ingram. Was in that matchup against the Detroit Lions. It was after that, then we go to Saints-Packers. And Green Bay had the early lead, but then the Saints come marching back, 26-17, the final there. 485 total yards for the Saints, and Ingram had 105 yards on the ground. Kamara had 57. Kamara also had 50 yards receiving in that game. So, again, starting to get that group into a rhythm here over the last couple of weeks. Then the Saints beat the Bears 20-12, their fifth straight win to improve to 5-2 on the season. And this one was a little bit closer. We thought maybe Chicago might pull out the win, but then they lose it late. And again, Ingram had 75 yards rushing, 24 yards receiving. Kamara, 28 yards rushing and 48 yards receiving. So that group starting to really get things going. The Saints then beat the Buccaneers to improve to 6-2. And they hold Tampa Bay to 200 yards of offense. And Kamara and Ingram, again, pretty even split. 77 yards on the ground for Ingram, 68 for Kamara, 84 yards receiving for Kamara. And Ingram had just one catch in that game. Then there was that Buffalo debacle. Saints beat the Bills 47-10. They had 482 yards. And pretty much all of that coming on the ground, 298 yards on the ground. Ingram and Kamara both over 100 yards on the ground. So that was maybe their most impressive offensive performance of the season. And then after that, the Washington Redskins come to town, nearly win the game, but they blow it late. And a lot of offense in this one as well. 530 yards of offense for the Saints. Ingram and Kamara, again, a huge part of that. But looking then to the loss against the Rams. Saints lost to the Rams 26-20. 87 yards rushing and 74 of that coming on one run. But Mark Ingram held to 31 yards on 11 carries. Kamara almost had 200 yards from scrimmage by himself. But Ingram, who really is, I think, more of the one that gets the offense going, especially on the ground. He was held to 36 yards on 13 carries. And the Rams didn't necessarily do anything really methodical. Jared Goff did throw for 354 yards, but they had 88 yards on the ground. But nonetheless, they did a good job of stopping the primary rusher for the Saints in Mark Ingram to lose that game 26-20. So then they bounce back by beating the Panthers for a second time, 31-21. And again, it was a lot of Ingram and Kamara in that game as well, as Kamara had 126 yards from scrimmage, and Ingram finished with 122 as well. So both had the same amount of rushing of scrimmage yards as the Saints win there to improve to 9-3. After that, Saints lose to the Falcons. Now this game, they lost Alvin Kamara to a concussion, and Mark Ingram really did not do much at all, 49 yards on the ground. So we're seeing that teams have been able to make the Saints one-dimensional. Now that's not going to be the solution to the problem 100%, as we saw against Carolina, on where the Panthers really did a good job of taking Kamara out of the game plan entirely. They sold out to stop the run, and in doing so, they left themselves vulnerable to Drew Brees. As just looking at the numbers from that game against the Panthers, the Saints held to a season low in rushing at 41 yards. Kamara had 23, Ingram had 22, but then Drew Brees goes for 376 yards in that game. Now, what will make this a different outcome for the Vikings? Well, I think the Vikings get the edge because their defense is one of the best in the NFL at getting pressure. They can get pressure with their starting four, which allows them to go with a normal defense and drop their defensive backs into coverage. They allow their linebackers to cover the middle of the field. You don't have to send eight or nine people on a blitz to try to get to Drew Brees. Now, the sack numbers are about the only numbers that you look at with the Vikings and you think, that's not what you elite defense. But the defense has not relied on those plays, just like with turnovers. They haven't relied on those turnovers or huge sack plays to get wins. They have relied on the ability to get teams off the field on third down, a much more consistent formula in order to win games in the NFL. So I think the biggest key for the Vikings on defense is going to be for them to get the Saints off the field on third down. But you look at Kamara and Ingram, the Panthers have the linebacking core to hold them in check with Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis. So they did their jobs and they held Ingram and Kamara in check during that game Sunday. But then you look at the back end, and the Panthers really don't have the defensive backs to be able to line up with guys like Michael Thomas, Ted Ginn, and Brandon Coleman, among others. So that's where the Panthers really got let down, was because then all of a sudden you're asking cornerbacks who aren't necessarily able to stand up to some of those good receivers. You're asking them then to try to do man coverage, and we saw the result. It just didn't work for the Panthers. But you look at what the Vikings have in the secondary, they've got some of the best players in the NFL. Xavier Rhodes, they've also got Harrison Smith. Trey Waynes has been playing exceptionally well over the past couple of weeks, so you slot him in against a guy like Ted Ginn and figure that he'll be able to definitely handle it. And you've got then Terrence Newman, who's as wily of a veteran as there is in the NFL. You've also got Mackenzie Alexander, and you've got Andrew Sendejo, who gets lost in the mix, but Sendejo having a tremendous season for the Vikings. So I think that the Vikings are going to be able to do enough to keep the Saints' weapons in check. The biggest key, of course, though, will be if their defensive line can get pressure. If they can get pressure on Drew Brees without sending extra bodies, well, then we're going to see that Saints offense struggle as we did in that first matchup of the year. And even if the Saints get some yards, the Vikings showed in that first matchup that they were able to turn them away in the red zone and hold them to field goals. Well, how did that work out for the Panthers, settling for field goals early in that game on Sunday? So it's going to be just a fascinating matchup between the Saints, who are coming in a little banged up. They lost one of their top offensive linemen, and his backup got a little dinged up as well. Pete, the, I believe, left guard for the Saints, fractured his fibula in that game against the Panthers, so he won't be back for the game on Sunday. So you figure that that will be a spot that the Vikings try to attack on that offensive line. You can say what you want about the Vikings offense over the last couple of weeks, but they have outscored their opponents 73-17 in those final games against the Bengals, the Packers, and the Bears. And then, of course, they beat Atlanta, too, on December 3rd, 14-9, the final in that game. So it was very, very similar game to how the Vikings lost to the Panthers back on December 10th. That was exactly what happened to the Panthers against the Saints this past weekend. So we'll talk a little bit more about the offense and what the offense needs to do against the Saints, but that was one of the biggest keys for the Vikings defensively, is being able to get pressure and cover up all those weapons, which I think the secondary will be able to do on Sunday. We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk a little Vikings offense when we come back after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Missed today's episode of The Scoop? Find each and every episode on myklgr.com under the Sports tab.
Back here on The Scoop, the Minnesota Vikings taking on the Saints on Sunday. We'll continue to break down some of the biggest matchups from the game and flipping our attention over to the offensive side of the ball. The Saints have struggled all season against the run, and that has come into play in a couple of games that they have lost. In that Los Angeles Rams game in particular, they were able to grind out some key first downs, and just looking at where the Saints rank defensively and seeing what they are able to do in that regard, the Saints are 17th in yards per game at 336.5. They give up 111.7 rushing yards per game, which puts them at 16th in the NFL. Passing yards per game, 224.8, which puts them at 15th. Now the Vikings, second in passing yards per game on defense, and they are also second in rushing yards per game on defense as well. So for the Vikings, if they can get some success sustained on offense, the key for them is going to be to mix it up. And we saw just such a variety of different plays in that first matchup of the season. Sam Bradford was at quarterback, and Vikings really just picked apart the Saints on offense. And it was something that we saw in the game on Sunday against the Panthers. Cam Newton able to find a lot of soft spots in the Saints' defense because the Saints really, really like to blitz to try to get extra pressure. And I think an area where this helps the Vikings is that Case Keenum is so good out of the pocket. And it's going to be interesting to see if the Vikings try to roll him out a little bit more to take advantage of the Saints trying to send some extra pressure. Because you've got plenty of guys that have an ability to get open. Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, Kyle Rudolph. You've got Jarius Wright. You've got Laquon Treadwell. You've got David Morgan. You've also got Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray in the backfield. So no shortage of offensive weapons for the Vikings. Looking at what the Panthers did to the Saints, you saw Christian McCaffrey have that long touchdown run. I think 57-yard run, and the Saints really were not able to catch him, but that hasn't been the first time that they have struggled with some of those speed players. So I think this is a perfect game for Jerick McKinnon to have a big showing. We've seen a couple of games where Jerick has been really involved in the passing game, and especially if cornerback Marshon Lattimore shadows Stephon Diggs and or Adam Thielen, like we talked about with AJ yesterday, then that's going to leave some opportunities for Jerick to pick up some yards on screens, quick slants, things along those lines. But I find it interesting too. There was a lot talked about how good of a job Lattimore did against Devin Funchess on Sunday, and we forget that Funchess is been very injured so far this season. He's battled shoulder ailments. He also has had some leg injuries that he's dealt with. So holding Funchess to 19 yards receiving certainly sounds good, but you got to take a look at the bigger picture, and also have to keep in mind that Marshon Lattimore has also given up 150 yards to Julio Jones. So it's not as if he has been a complete shutdown cornerback in his own right. So I think there will be opportunities, and Adam Thielen may be one of the best in the NFL at being able to get defensive backs to commit to a move, bite on a move, and then get open. And I think that's going to come into play very, very much on Sunday. So it's all about just using your skill players to get open and to come up with some big touchdowns. Pat Shurmur as well, I think, certainly is going to take advantage of what this defense does. But in order to take advantage of when the Saints blitz, you have to be ready to throw the ball quickly. So we'll see if Case Keenum is ready for that. Now, a lot of discussion about this being Case's first playoff start, and I mean, it is his first playoff start, but also, I feel like every start over the past few weeks of the season has been a playoff caliber start for Case Keenum, because of the fact that Coach Zimmer hasn't committed to him really other than a week at a time. So Keenum has been playing every week as if it could be his last. And I don't think that changes in the playoffs. I think if you want to call it the way that the Vikings have played it with Keenum, I think they have played it the right way in making sure that he is preparing every week as if he could potentially go back to being the backup quarterback. And he really has not let us down at any point here during the season. He had a couple of bad throws in that Carolina game. One interception, though, not necessarily his fault. One of them was. But Keenum has thrived on not having the certainty of next week. And what better way in the playoffs than to have that, where if you lose, you go home. So it'll be business as usual for Keenum, and I don't think there's any reason to suspect that Keenum will have a disappointing performance against the Saints defense that really just took advantage of Panthers' mistakes in that that game on Sunday. The other big equalizer for the Vikings will be home field advantage at U.S. Bank Stadium, and it expects to be the loudest it's been all season, which is certainly going to be a surprise if they're able to do that, because there have been plenty of loud games already this season, and the Vikings will be able to use that to their advantage. We've seen teams come in and just look completely different or phased or rattled when they go up against the crowd noise that the Vikings bring at U.S. Bank Stadium. So that's going to be something that the Saints will try to replicate, I'm sure, while they practice, because of the fact that they get they have a domed stadium themselves, so they can try to replicate the crowd noise a little bit more if they so choose. But I think I really am not concerned as much about the Vikings' ability to put up points on the Saints defense as I am about the Vikings defense being able to stop the Saints offense. And considering that the Vikings defense was the best unit in the league, that really is saying something about how good the Saints offense has been. But if you look at just what the Vikings have offensively compared to what the Saints have defensively, I think the Vikings get a big advantage there. Now, my initial prediction for this game was 24-14 Vikings, but an interesting point has been brought up on Twitter that the last time a team beat a division opponent three times was the 2009 Dallas Cowboys. They beat Philadelphia twice during the regular season, and then they beat them in the wild card round of the playoffs to set up a matchup with the Vikings at the Metrodome. That, of course, was the Brett Favre-led Vikings at that point. And so they're trying to play off this. Well, they could be looked at as having momentum coming into the game. And how did that work out for the Cowboys exactly? Well, 34-3 loss to the Vikings. Now, that Vikings team was pretty much all offense. They had some good players on defense, but Brett Favre leading that offense, that was the way the Vikings were winning games back in 2009. You look at this version of the Vikings team, they've got the great elite defense, and they've also got a lot of great players on offense. So I think you go in and you see what Dallas was no slouch that year either. They had a great offense in and of itself, but the Vikings completely shut them down. So I think if we see the Vikings defense completely shut down the Saints, the question of can the offense put up enough points to win, I think they can, because the Vikings give up 12 points per game at home. So you look at it, if your offense gives you two touchdowns, then you are going to be able to win a lot of your home games, considering how well this defense has played. Two touchdowns, that's it. And I think the Vikings can put up more than that on this Saints defense. So I'm going to amend my prediction a little bit. I think Vikings 30, Saints 13, in a tune-up before the Falcons come to town against the Eagle against the Vikings next week. So yeah, that gives you a little bit of a surprise on my thoughts for that Falcons-Eagles game coming up on Saturday. I think the Falcons will win, and I think that'll set up a rematch of 1998, and the Vikings will get both demons exercised before heading to the Super Bowl. We're going to take another break. We will take a look at what's on deck when we come back here on The Scoop.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. For the latest scores, play-by-play, schedules, and more, visit myklgr.com.
Let's take a look at what's on deck here for tonight. We'll start off with men's basketball. Big Ten schedule. Penn State is at Indiana tonight at 5:30. Wisconsin at Nebraska at 7:30 tonight. At number 5, Purdue is at Michigan. That's at 8 o'clock tonight on ESPN. Top 25, Baylor at number 2, West Virginia. That's at 6 o'clock tonight. Number 8, Texas Tech at number 9, Oklahoma. Also at 6 o'clock. Texas A&M at number 21, Kentucky at 6 o'clock. Also, Syracuse at number 3, Virginia, that's at 7 o'clock. Boston College at number 20, North Carolina, that's at 7 o'clock as well. Butler at number 25, Creighton at 7:30. Iowa State at number 12, Kansas at 8 o'clock. Number 13, Seton Hall at Marquette at 8 o'clock. Number 24, Tennessee at Vanderbilt at 8 o'clock tonight. Over to the NBA, Miami at Toronto at 6:30. Portland is at Oklahoma City at 7 o'clock. Orlando at Dallas at 7:30. Sacramento is at the Los Angeles Lakers. That's at 9:30 tonight. And the NHL, Winnipeg at Buffalo at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. Vancouver's at Washington at 7 Eastern. Chicago at Ottawa at 7:30. Carolina at Tampa Bay at 7:30. Florida at St. Louis at 8 o'clock, Edmonton at Nashville at 8 o'clock, and Calgary at the Minnesota Wild, that's at 8 o'clock Eastern Time tonight. That is a look at what's on deck. It's time to wrap it up. That does it for today's edition of The Scoop. Coming up on the show tomorrow, we'll talk with Dave Benz, TV play-by-play voice for the Minnesota Timberwolves. We'll get a recap of that fun win by the Wolves over the Cavaliers and also preview what's to come and what has led to the defensive turnaround for the Wolves in recent games. If you missed any portion of today's show, myklgr.com/thescoop is the spot you're going to want to go. Have a great rest of your afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow at 3:05 here on KLGR Redwood Falls.